And in about an hour, Kristen Scott Benson, four-time IBMA Banjo Player of the Year and really just about the best banjo player walking around, will be on. We will talk about banjo playing with her. We will talk about the new Graskles CD a bit when I get my pay. And she is a regular member of the Graskles. I guess you have to figure they are probably the most prominent bluegrass band out there also. So she's the best with the best band. Can't ask any more for that, except after talking to Kristen for about half an hour, we're going to patch into the Chief, Sonny Osborne, and we're all just going to talk amongst ourselves. Actually, normally what happens in that situation is I just sit back and listen. And Sonny and Kristen will talk about banjos, their relationship, which is a very wonderful relationship, mentor, mentee, friend, friend to friend, and just very close and very, it'll be fun. All right. I mean, I think if I pushed all the right buttons, I should have on the phone Kristen Scott Benson. You there?
I am here.
Good, good. Nice that we were chatting just a little bit, making sure everybody had a good Thanksgiving before we got on the phone, and we were just laughing and talking about the Osborne Brothers. And as everybody knows, we're going to join. I'll patch Sonny in a little bit when we're finished. We'll get to the point where we need to bring him in. But the stories about Sonny and the Osborne Brothers could just go on forever and ever and ever.
Yeah, they really could.
I mean, there's just nothing like them. And I was mentioning to Kristen, of course, this new album, When I Get My Pay, is just it's a great album. And I played a couple cuts already. And we were talking about the fact that with this band, the Graskles, and because of the makeup of the band, and because of the great library of Osborne Brothers tunes, you guys always seem to go back and pick up a tune or two from the Osborne Brothers, and it's just great to hear you. And gosh, bluegrass melodies, you just absolutely nailed it. Just absolutely nailed it as a band.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that, because the stress is on Jamie to sing the lead and me to play the banjo. I mean, Sonny's banjo playing is as much of an imprint on their sound, just like Bobby's voice. I always said the Osborne Brothers had two voices, his banjo and Bobby's vocals. And anytime you do a song like that, because all of us are just obsessed with the Osborne Brothers music, we know you're not gonna do it better than they did, but at the same time, we love it so much. And the two Terrys, Terry Eldridge and Terry Smith, spent 25 years between them in that band, so it's just hard. It's in our DNA, and it's hard not to do those songs.
You know, when I was looking at this this new album, on the very front, of course, everybody had to go get dirty for the album cover.
Yeah.
10 years the Graskles have been doing this.
Yeah, that's right. I've only been there for a little over half of it. Mm-hmm. But they started 10 years ago. They actually started as Don Parton backup band. Yeah, and then did that for a year or two, and then broke off. And they were always doing Graskles things around it, but they broke off and started just being the Graskles, I think, a year or two into it.
Well, and they were the Little Graskles first.
Yeah, I know. There was actually some print, right, that called them that.
Yep. Well, and they had an album called The Little Graskles on Glaxo, and then Compton is Mando, and it's a lot of the same. Yeah, but it's just really straight down the line bluegrass. This is a long time ago. I picked it up at an IBMA booth. And I've got it somewhere. Yeah, the Little Graskles. And then they kind of lost a little. And then then that's probably when their 10 years started off. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you being available. And gosh, I enjoy your music so much. And just so people know, Kristen, of course, is four-time. I don't know if anybody's won more than four times IBMA Banjo Player of the Year, but you deserve every year of it. And I'll just say this. I've met Kristen a couple times at one of Sonny's camps. And in case you haven't noticed when you listen to her, it's just, how can I say this? Kristen's playing is almost, I'll say almost flawless. And from a banjo player's point of view, that's just remarkable, because your timing is, first of all, impeccable. And what you play is just, it's perfect. It's just perfect. And I guess everybody else agrees with what I'm saying, because you get so much accolade from the community of bluegrass players, and that, which is a big deal.
Well, I certainly appreciate that, especially coming from a banjo player. You know, one of my favorite things about talking to Sonny and being friends with him, and you're in the same boat, when even other musicians that are great players, we kind of all get what we do, but when you're talking to a banjo player, you can take it up another notch and just really talk about the intricacies of the instrument and really understand one another and what you're going for. So I certainly do appreciate that.
Well, take a second. And of course, the new CD is just a great... how long has this thing been out? Less than a month?
Yeah, it just came out.
Yeah. It's called When I Get My Pay. And like I said, everybody's all dirty and everything on... Because it looks like you just put a building together. I don't think you actually did that, but it's a great album. It's a great album. And then you did this video with the American Pickers, the guys on TV that go around and find treasures in people's barns and stuff with Dirk Bentley. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is neat. We know Jamie Johnson, one of the lead singers for that. He's an ambitious guy. He's a social guy, and he's always out and about meeting these people while the rest of us just stay at home and grow in. But he met Mike at a charity event at the Palm downtown in Nashville, and he is a gigantic fan of the show, and he told Mike that and asked if they had any music because he just felt like, you know, bluegrass would be a real good fit for that show, and he already knew they didn't have a theme song, you know, so he said, you should get a theme song, so... Jamie co-wrote the song American Pickers that's on the record. He co-wrote it with his wife and a guy named, I think, Jeffrey East. And Mike heard it and liked it, so we did the release party at his store there in Nashville. So it's been cool.
That's fun. Hey, listen, you've mentioned a little bit about the Osmond Brothers and Sonny's influence. Take a minute, and we'll patch Sonny in when we're up to that point where we feel like we want to, because of that, whenever I call in Sonny, and we've had Ronnie Reno with Sonny and Larry Stevenson with Sonny, and usually I just...
Chaos ensues.
I'm telling you what, for an hour with him and Ronnie Reno, I don't know if they spoke a word. All I heard was laughter. I just sat back, and it was just laughter, laughter, laughter for an hour, and then we were done.
You can't steer anything once Sonny's aboard. He's going to drive the boat or the bus or whatever he's got.
That's right. Tell us, the people listening may not, I understand your relationship with Sonny, but could you take a minute and explain, number one, your appreciation for the music, his musical abilities, but also your personal relationship with Sonny over the years as it's developed. You want to do that for a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of my favorite things to talk about, and it's one of the things that you still kind of shake yourself and think, wow, you know, because musically he meant so much to me prior to ever meeting him. Because I started playing the banjo when I was 13, but I had been going to shows earlier than that and had seen the Osmond Brothers. And when I started playing the banjo, I really got into the Osmond Brothers. Obviously, anybody studying banjo is going to get into Sonny. And so I was a huge fan of his to begin with. And the thing that attracted, if I had to just say one thing about him, that I was attracted to the most, it was his backup. Without a doubt, his backup playing, you know, spoke to me more, really, than any other player ever did. And I certainly sort of tried to pattern myself after that to a large degree. He's very vocal with his banjo. He's a great harmony singer. And the Osmond Brothers, the whole band is built on the vocals. And he plays the banjo that way. He has just a really, really good comprehensive vision of what he wants things to sound like. I think tons of the arranging, you know, came from Sonny, and the banjo was like the instrumental stamp on all that music, and it's impossible to hear it without that influence because it's so indelible. But so I was a huge fan of Sonny's, and then I got to meet him. My first, I joined the Larry Stevenson Band. I was 19, and he was going to produce a record for Larry. So I was going in the studio, very young and inexperienced, and they were terrified for me, and they were more scared for me than I was because they had seen Sonny in action, and everybody knows he has such a commanding presence. And you know, I didn't know him, but I knew that. I mean, you could see that from stage. So they were actually very protective. They tried to, you know, prepare me for any scenario. And we got in there, and he was completely nice and so supportive. And I think the other guys were a little disappointed. You know, of course, I was relieved, but it went well. So, but then I was a student at Belmont University, so they all went to lunch, and in time, just right that I could go catch one of the classes. So I went to class and came back when they said we were going to restart. And he had paid for their meal. They all ate Mexican. It's funny. And he paid for the bill. So I had the receipt for my lunch, which this is my 19-year-old metabolism talking, but I had a Mountain Dew and a donut for lunch there at school. So I handed in the receipt. And since he had paid for theirs, you know, I handed in mine and implied that he should reimburse me for that. And then he decided to tell me how much I owed him for the privilege of being in his presence. And from that point on, it was the Sonny that they expected, and everything went great. But we were pals, you know, it broke the ice, and it's just been great. And I tend to cower, and I'm certainly not bold, but for some reason that day, maybe it was because they had just gotten me so worked up. I just thought, man, I can't let this happen. I'm just going to go do this. And as big of an influence as he is musically, I'm just not going to let this affect me. And for once it worked, and then we became great friends. And it's morphed into, you know, I dare say, and he said it first, because I would feel a bit maybe overstepping my bounds to have brought it, but he implied it first, but very paternal way that I feel about Sonny now, and, you know, just very, it's a great personal relationship. He's been crucial in so many key decisions musically, and not just playing, but I mean as far as career moves and just life in general, he's been there for me. And I have a great dad, but my dad doesn't know anything about the banjo or this music, and Sonny has really filled a void there for me and helped me get my old banjo that I play. And he was the reason that I discovered the pre-war banjos and began to understand what made them special. That's like a flip of a switch. Like, ignorance is bliss, I tell young players. Until you hear the difference,
it's unexplainable.
Enjoy that. Enjoy that, because if you ever do hear it, it's going to keep you up at night until you get it. And it's an expensive thing to get. So, but he was the reason that, because he let me spend so much time with his Granada, and that's, to me, that's the holy grail of banjos, and I've spent a lot of time with that banjo, and it kind of awakened the awareness of what those old instruments can do. So, and then he found the one that I bought. He called me and said, Frank Mead has an old three, and I know this banjo, everybody knows the banjo, and he wants to sell it. And he bought it from Frank's, and I met him in a parking lot and kept it for a while, and you know, it's just so many really big things that Sonny's been there, and it's a relationship that, gosh, it's right at the top of the list of those that I treasure most.
Well, it really is, and I to a lesser degree, I've become friends with Sonny over the last 10 or 11 years, and I feel the same way. It's like, wait a minute, am I really, did I just get off the phone with Sonny talking about UK Basque? I mean, just like one of those things, but I'll say this, and I think you'll agree, we'll say all these nice things before we get him on so he's not embarrassed.
I know.
I think that once that Sonny is your friend, he's your friend.
Yeah, he is. There aren't a lot for him, mm-hmm. and the ones he has, he keeps them close, and I think all of us feel pretty special, you know, and we see, man, I feel so blessed because there's Sonny, the persona, you know, that everybody is.
That's right.
The ones that you see on stage, and you still get that. I mean, I see him on the bus when there's a crowd, and he's Sonny. But I also see him, you know, with his wife and his dog, and at Sonny's when he gives me a hug, and I really know him, and gosh, that's really cool.
He has I'll explain it this way to you. When you, it's funny when you mentioned meeting him in the parking lot to get your Gibson, you know, a couple years after I knew him and Frank was making the Chief banjos, I wanted a darker tone. I had an Ohm banjo, which I liked, but it was just a real bright sound because that's what I wanted then. But then I bought a Chief from Sonny. So we met in a parking lot somewhere just a little north of Louisville, and he drove up because I live in Northern Kentucky. And that's kind of the way he does things. He just shows up. And as you're talking to Sonny, you are fully engaged. This is what I try to explain to people. It's when I get him on the show, which he's on a lot, but when you're talking to Sonny, you are fully engaged in a conversation. There's not any lag time. He has an extremely quick wit, and he's a very bright man, and it's just, it once you're talking to him, you have to be ready to deal with that presence as he's sitting there, and he's a nice guy. He laughs about the stuff that surprised you, which always cracks me up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got quite a presence, and there's this, and musically, again, I go back to his banjo playing so much because I told you before we got on that I keep my iPod on shuffle, and sometimes I'm just amazed at the sheer volume of music that those guys recorded. And, you know, his playing is just as, it's a, most people's playing is a fair mirror of their personality a lot of times. And I think his is. I mean, he's, you said he's quick-witted, he's bright, and he's commanding. All those things are reflected in how he plays. And you just listen to the innovative stuff he was doing all those years ago, and it's like, wow. And the feel and the attack and the greasiness of a lot of it, you know. Even I can play so much of that stuff note for note, and it doesn't sound like him. And that's how it works. I know that's how it works, but it can still frustrate you, right? But but yeah, he's just such a, he's a cool guy. He's a complex fellow, but he's a loyal friend.
Yes, he is. And let me ask you this: as a banjo player at your level, when you listen to stuff, and you mentioned his backup playing, which folks, what if you don't play in a band or play in an instrument, what Kristen can tell you what she's talking about, but when you listen to his backup playing, we were talking before we went on the air about Up This Hill and Down, just the stuff that he's doing in the background and playing around and all these long stretched out notes. What do you think when you first hear that as a musician, you're starting to trying to figure out what's going on in his head? How do you even deal with what he was doing? And that was a long time ago.
It was a really long time ago, and I think when I tell students or something, like when we do Foggy Mountain Breakdown, I'll play the 1949 recording of Earl doing it and say, listen how great that is. Nobody's ever played it that good, ever. And it's 1949, and you have to keep that in perspective, too. It's the 60s and 70s. And so the first thing that hits me is just how unorthodox it is. No one else was doing that, and it's very playful. The spirit behind his backup on Up This Hill and Down and things like it's aggressive and playful and confident and very unorthodox. You know, he never rolled on Up This Hill and Down, and when we recorded that song, actually, you know, the guys in there were like, well, we need you to roll. You know, the things have changed, and the banjo's role, R-O-L-E, the banjo's role has changed in a bluegrass band. She listened to what he did, and I try to do, I always try to, you know, honor the original cuts and stuff, but all of that stuff just creates this this branding on the music, and that's what I think the vast majority of us lack, whether it's backup or lead, is the identity. That got lost, like after the, I guess you'd call Sonny a second generation, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, after Crow and Sonny and Alan Shelton and Bill Emerson and all these guys, they all sounded so different. And now the differences are minute, and only banjo players here a lot of times hears the difference between them. It didn't used to be that way. He was so unique. And I just love that that just the spirit behind how he played. And again, I think that stems from who he is,
his personality.
And I think
yeah.
It's the reason I can't do it. You know that, like I, you know, I. Everybody knows what they can do and what they can't do, and you're acutely aware of weaknesses. And one of the things that I'm just weak on is. Playing with the kind of attitude that he used, and there are other players. I mean, all across genres, there are players that can play with so much attitude and confidence, and he was able to do that, and I admire it so much. And everything he played, but then you take it to a different song, like the Once More lick. Do you know the backup the Nooners thing that he did, leaning into the vocal pack? You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Gosh, now see, to me that is just, I heard it, and I didn't even know where the diminished chord was yet, but I had to learn that lick. I mean, it was such a beautiful thing, and he's very chord-oriented, which I love, and he's also very still guitar-oriented. Heavily influenced by Steel Licks, and you can hear that in his playing. And he listened to piano and other things, but I think, you know, he has all that playfulness like on Up This Hill Now, but then Beneath the Waters, all of those things that are slower ballads, he played beautiful backup, and his fills are just as, you know, integral to the song as the lyrical line before and after it. And he played in holes. He was the first guy I ever noticed that on banjo, you know, you don't have to do something all the time. Just wait it out. And when there's a hole on the slow tunes, play your fill just like a fiddle would. And that was actually not that common. Sonny was one of the first guys to go about it that way. So I just learned so much from him. And I'm always rejuvenated. Like if I get the other band that really influenced me that made me want to play because they were out and about was Scott Vestal with Doyle Austin and Quicksilver. Mm-hmm. Totally different thing, but Scott Vestal just annihilated me. You talk about perfection and just so smooth and clear and separated notes. You know, he really killed me. And I loved that whole approach too. And so I can get rejuvenated if I don't listen to much bluegrass, but it always helps me if I'm burned out or something, and if I'm sleepy trying to drive home. I can play the Osmond Brothers, or I can play 1985 Fall
with Quicksilver.
Yeah. Man, I feel good again.
They feel young again. Yeah, they drew from so many, like you were talking, the steel guitar licks, and Sonny was famous for that, and horns and piano. Mm-hmm. And he actually said once, and he didn't just say it to me alone, but if he could have chose what he wanted to do, he wanted to be a piano player.
I've heard him say that.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, my question was, well, why don't you do it?
Yeah,
I mean. So do it. This was several years ago, and I thought, man, you've got time. Do it.
Yep. That's just the way he hears the world. And that's the thing is, too, and you talked about his chords. Now, banjo players, we talk about Don Reno's left hand and the chord from his guitar playing and music. You know, Sonny is pretty much self-taught musician. You agree with me on that? You know, his so where he's coming up with these left-hand patterns and whatnot, it's just its ability to hear and put it right on the fretboard, I guess. I don't understand that. I don't get that, but that's what he does.
Yeah, I think he hears it in his head. Like he said before, that when he would figure out breaks, it would be on the way to the studio to record it. So it all happened in his head. And then he had there were lots of methods of this, I think, but he was able to shed the inhibition to try things. And so he was fearless. And if he heard it in his head, he would go for it and wasn't bothered at all if it didn't turn out right, because it might turn into something else. So he just had a very adventurous approach to everything. And even his solos, as he said, he would drive to the studio, and by the time he got there, he would have them worked up. So absolutely, he just hears those things. And like as far as a very chordal approach to banjo, the guy that taught me, his name was Al Osteen, a great player.
Sure.
He was really, really good at that stuff. He was a great musician. I was so blessed to sort of have access to him. He just sped things along. And a lot of things he had to work really hard for, he just gave them to me. And, you know, so much of that with hearing the chords and different things is planting the notes in your mind and learning enough of that stuff that they're there. So then you hear the voices. And even if you have to find them on the fretboard, if you hear them, if your mind wants to go to this certain voice, you can find it and on the fretboard. And I think that's what Sonny did. He just heard these beautiful things.
And he went and found them. Yeah. Well, you've heard the story where he could figure out how to play before he actually saw and heard and held a banjo. He knew how to play it.
No, actually, I haven't heard him.
Oh, yeah.
That.
He was in school and he had heard, I forget what song it was, but he was just kind of figuring it had to be like this. Something had to be going on this instrument like this. And then he got one, and then he could play one
and
before
he was right?
Yep, he was right.
Wow. See, our banjo players are pretty methodical folks, and that's proof of it there, that he has the mind that just lends itself to banjo, because it is very machine-like, it's, you know, within the bluegrass context, at least, within Scruggs playing. it's a skill. You know, like when I do, and I'm very, very weak on this, but when I do branch out and teach kids some theory and stuff like that, I always think very linearly when you step outside that box. Scruggs playing is its own thing, and it requires kind of a mechanical mind to get the beauty of it. And I just remember when roles would fall together, it was like a leap of faith. If I do this, this, and this, it'll sound like that, and it would. And it's just these puzzle pieces that go together that turn into what Scruggs figured out. It's just amazing.
Yeah. You have to have all those tools. I think what you're talking about is you have to have all those tools that Scruggs really just made out of whole cloth, and you have to have all of them at your disposal. And then once you master all those, as everyone says, go back and learn Earl, then you can start doing your own thing within that context.
That's right. And, you know, I've said so many times, the thing that is most impressive about Earl to me is if you look, now this is all within, because I am such a fan of the banjo outside the bluegrass realm. I'm just insanely fond of people like Noam and Bela and Jens Krüger and all those guys, and Scott. All those guys, I love what they do. But within the bluegrass realm, if you look at the evolution of instruments, the way you play them has all, it's evolved dramatically. Look at Josh and Jerry Douglas for dobro, and look at Paul Warren and Aubrey Haney on fiddle, and look at Sam Bush versus just the tremolo-based stuff that you were used to hearing. Like the instruments have evolved drastically. Banjo has not. I mean, it's changed a little just because you have new sounding phones with lots of the blues notes and that whole thing. But still, the basic way that we do it is what he did. And in fact, your worth as a banjo player, to a large degree, is how well do you adhere to what he did. And I can't think of any other instrument in any other kind of music where it works that way.
I think you're right. And then, of course, and you do very well, and I've seen you do Don Reno, and just if you can try to explain, which is impossible, this is a stupid question, but Don Reno versus Earl Scruggs, do the basics of that real quick, and then in a minute here we're going to hook into to Sonny, but I know that you play Reno stuff pretty dead on.
Yeah, my dad was a huge Reno fan, and he would bribe me because I fell on the Scruggs line pretty fast, and he would bribe me, and he would say, if you'll learn, follow the leader, I'll take you to Dahlonega, Georgia, to see Dawson Brothers, right? So I listened to Don Reno a lot, and Don was a guitar player. From what I hear, that's really what he wanted to do. And he played a lot of single-string things. He played a lot of downstrokes with his thumb and used a lot of chords. And his roles were just different. It was very much forward. Based roles, and I'm not really never claimed to be. I learned a lot of those tunes. I can't say that I ever got really the feel that he had. I just don't have it in me to quite sound that way, even if I know the tunes. But I did spend a lot of time listening to him, and it was an entirely different style. And I loved that both those guys, they were contemporaries, but they were so different, right? And it was like Earl was this very refined machine gun. Just the separation between the notes was just so big, and every note was like its own target. And then Reno had very much more to me an approach that you would use on guitar and mandolin. And as you say, it's easy if you hear it, but it's hard to explain, to articulate. But it's not easy. I'll say that. Mm-mm. It's definitely not easy. When you want to talk innovators, I mean, he was doing a whole lot of stuff. You listen to his, and very identifiable, the way I bragged on Sonny about an imprint
right.
on a song or a sound. I mean, you hear, I Know You're Married, but I Love You Still. Mm-hmm. You hear him play that, and it's pretty amazing. Certainly does who it is.
And his left hand was just so. Of course. He, what we're talking about too is he was more of a two finger player than what we would talk about as a normal three finger. So the right hand, just forget that because that was just freakish. But his left hand was so strong on chording and noting the fretboard. It was just from another planet. I always thought.
Yeah, Absolutely.
You know. And I think you're right. It's probably from his guitar work, maybe. Maybe that's where it came from. What do you think? Let you and I take a break. I'm going to play a tune from the new album when I get my pay. And then if I push all the buttons right, we'll have Sonny hooked up when we get back. So I'm going to, just for a second, you won't lose me. Stay on the phone. I have to push a button to get back to the music. And then the next 3 minutes, then we'll come back and we'll find Sonny. If I lose you, I'll find you again, okay?
Okay.
All right, hold on. All right. All right, let's do this. We can do this. You're going to hear the American Pickers, which is the one she was talking about, what Kristen was talking about. We're talking to Kristen Scott Benson from the Grascals, who's a phenomenal banjo player. And we're going to play this tune that we talked about a little bit for the TV show American Pickers, and you're going to like this. And in the meantime, I will reach out, and I'll find Sonny somewhere. We'll come back in just a minute, folks.